Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Welcome to The Creative Spark. Today's guest, Michelle Andrea Smith, a native of Kingston, Jamaica, started her career as a filmmaker in 2008 with a documentary entitled I Want to Be President. Michelle loves and appreciates the power entertainment has to impact the lives of people around the globe. Along with Michelle's passion for the arts in its various forms, Michelle has always been a strong proponent for social justice. Founder of the Pembroke Taparelli Arts and Film Festival in Los Angeles, Michelle has combined her love for the arts and her passion for social justice. She wanted to take action and provide a platform for those artists and activists or artivists who seek to use their artistic voice for social change. Michelle's festival experience was honed during her stint as programmer for the inaugural Diaspora program for the Hollywood Black Film Festival in 2013. Michelle holds a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from Adelphi University and a Juris Doctorate from Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Brian. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. Gosh, we have a lot to cover. And we met in Los Angeles.
Yes.
I think we met at some kind of
a conference.
A conference that was kind of like at the end where they try to sell you up and stuff like that.
Right. Wait, but they've become so big. Remember, it was Stage 32.
Oh,
the guy who founded Stage 32, that was the first,
Wow.
Yes, that was the first level of Stage 32.
I'll be darned.
Yes, it's so crazy how much he's grown.
Right.
Years.
And, and since I have not been in the acting biz and such for a little while, I haven't really followed what Stage 32 is doing, but I'm glad we met there.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gosh. Okay. So you wear so many hats: actor, creative, lawyer, activist, and film festival director. Which was the first thing that kind of set the others into motion?
Wow. I would say the acting, the arts, just the love for the arts. Because as a kid, I always used to go to the movie theaters. I would sit in the movie theaters for hours every Saturday, because that was the only day I was able to do it. So I'd go to all the matinees, starting Saturday morning matinee.
Mm-hmm.
And just watch movie the entire day. I would just, because back then you go to one movie and sneak into the others, right? Like you pay for one and then you sneak into all the other movies throughout the day. So I spent my
I didn't do that. I'm just kidding.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, well,
I'm joking.
So that was my Saturday mornings. And this was in Jamaica.
Okay.
This is my Saturday mornings, going to the movie theaters and just watching. And then it was a lot of musicals and black comedies and karate films.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
So, yeah. So that was my like indoctrination into the arts, right? That. And then I was also, as a kid, just very political in the sense that, for some reason, politics fascinated me. My mom and dad were not political people. They kind of were like more, you know, just let's go to work and go home kind of people. Like they didn't get involved in politics, but I did have family members that were politicians. And in fact, one of my cousins became the Prime Minister of Jamaica for a short time. But yeah, so I did have extended family that was into politics. And as a kid, they all thought I was going to go into politics because I was always very vocal about various things. And so they thought she'd become a politician. So that was all the act, the I guess advocacy, the concern for people in a political sense, and the arts have just always been a part of my makeup from ever since I can remember.
So when was like that? I mean, I can see the blending happening, but when was the turning point that made you realize art could be your form of activism?
Well, you know what? I don't know that I even thought about it like that until I met my acting coach in New York. I was acting in New York. I wasn't necessarily satisfied with the way things were. There was just all of this, you had to, your complexion, your hair texture. There were just all these things that was a part of the industry and a part of, how someone achieved a success that didn't describe me, I wasn't the body type, didn't have the hair texture, I didn't have the complexion necessarily at the time.
Now, are we
So
talking about black actresses?
yes,
Okay,
yes.
yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, now it's like, ethnic, what, ambiguous is the term, ethnically
Sure.
ambiguous. Back then it was just like light skin with curly hair. You know what I mean? Like, so
Oh,
it's changed a lot. But, and so you're either light skinned or you're dark skinned, right?
wow.
And there are particular roles for both of those extremes. But when you're brown and kind of in the middle, it's kind of, where do you fit? So that was a big part of that. And so I had an acting coach, Nathan George, whom I just adored because he was a brilliant actor, but didn't like the politics of Hollywood. And so he was a teacher. He, acted on Broadway. He's done everything. And just the way he approached the work and approached just creating his own work made me start to look at my role differently as an actor. It's like I don't have to just be an actor and sit here and wait for work. I can create the work. And so that's what I started doing. I started producing plays, producing variety shows, as you'd call them, but they were more about culture and bringing, information, education, if you will, around certain issues. And even then, like, I didn't necessarily think of it as activism, but I've always been concerned about the state of humanity and social issues and social justice, if you will. And which is one of the reasons I wanted to become a lawyer, right? Because I felt that that was a way that I could help. So after being an actress for years and, not being able to kind of financially provide for myself and my son, whom I had at the time, I decided that I needed to do something that I love and something that I could make a difference in the world. And naturally, I thought law, right? And because it was a natural evolution for me, having been interested in that for so long, even though I kind of went towards the arts more. It was always in the back of my head as something that I would love to do because I thought it would be a great way to help people and be of service.
Was this around the same time that you did your documentary, I Want to Be President?
Well, yeah, that came after law school. So I went to law school and did an internship. And it was at that time that I came to the stark reality that this is not how I'm going to make my living as an as an as a because I thought I'd become a criminal attorney. And yes, I went to court and I bawled my eyes out the first day. I just was so like discouraged by the whole system and the way the defendants were being treated by the judges and the prosecution and even some of their own of the legal aid lawyers. And no fault of theirs, they're overworked. I know many great legal aid lawyers. A lot of friends of mine after law school became legal aid attorneys, and they're brilliant. But they have so many cases, so much to do that, they can't give the same amount of attention to every single case, given the circumstances. So it was very disappointing for me, and it was also just an eye-opening for what I could tolerate, right? What I had the capacity to take on. And as an empath, it just makes it a lot more difficult to be in those types of environments and keep your mental health. So I knew at that point that criminal law was not for me. So I stayed more towards the intellectual property, copyright, trademark, those kinds of things, during my second and third year in law school, because I thought, well, I'm an actress, maybe I can go do the entertainment go the route, entertainment law route. But there wasn't much advocacy in that, in the sense that you're not helping the average day, everyday person in that capacity. So I was, it was more corporate. So when I got out of law school, that's kind of what I did, more of that corporate, but on a litigation side. So when
You
more
still in New York?
litigation support, I'm
Still
sorry.
in New York then?
No.
Up down
Oh,
in LA.
a whole nother thing. So I had lived in California prior to law school. And I moved back to New York because my father was ill and he ended up dying. So when my father passed away, I just stayed in New York to be closer to my mom so she wouldn't be alone on the East Coast. So I ended up staying there. But once I was in law school and determined that I was not going to pursue the law in the capacity that I thought I would, I decided I'm moving back to California. So right after law school, I packed my bags and came back to California. So I was in California at the time, working in various major law firms in litigation support, primarily. So a lot of cases, a lot of corporate law. It was interesting, but it was very stressful. And once I decided that I was going to return to the entertainment industry, the first thing I did was, it was during the Obama election, I started that documentary, I Want to Be President. The reason I did that was because here we had this Black man running, and the first viable Black African American candidate, I should say, for their job at the time. And so I wanted to kind of document what it meant, because I remember I used to substitute teach prior to law school. And I would always start out by asking the kids, and I did middle school primarily. My first day, I would always ask the kids what they wanted to be when they grew up. And I never heard any of the Black children that I taught say they wanted to be president. And I remember once a young girl stood up and said she wanted to be an astronaut. And the students laughed so hard. And that really bothered me. That one, I don't think a lot of them even knew what an astronaut was after, because I spoke with them after the, so a lot of them did not know what an astronaut was. And two, the fact that they were mocking and laughing at someone else's dream was very disconcerting. So, of course, I had a conversation with them, and, so it was great to kind of see this candidate and what he stood for and what he meant to young children. And so I started the documentary, and what I did was I had my son at the time and all of his friends, and I interviewed all of them and interviewed kids. And then I would go to the polling stations and interview adults and other people. And it was fascinating to see how many people I had so many white Americans who were so happy to see this candidate. And a lot of them who were older, 70s, 80s, said they didn't think that they would ever live to see the time when a black man would run for president and be viable, you know, because I think we've had other people run. They didn't have the you know, I think Jesse Jackson ran in the 80s, I believe. And Jesse was you know, a legitimate candidate. However, I don't believe he had the support and was as, for lack of a better word, I'm going to say viable because that's what I've been saying, as Obama was. And so it was fascinating to see and document. So that's kind of when I started that journey with the documentary. And then that just and I became ill at the time. I got cancer. And so the documentary during chemo, I was put on hold because of the chemotherapy was it was brutal. It was brutal. I attribute the cancer to a lot of stress in my life at the time because of my job. And that's when I decided that 100% was definitely not the route I was going to go. I couldn't do that anymore because it was very, very stressful. And it was also just a lot of work that I was not, and you know what? I don't want to say enjoying because I don't want people to think that it's just about enjoying the work that
But it's
you
so
do.
important.
Yes, I think, but I think it's important to understand that there's a di it's not just about enjoyment, but it's also being in alignment with your purpose, with your calling. And I think when you're out of alignment with that, you're not going to enjoy what you do, and you're going to be stressed, and you're going to could potentially be, you know, be driven ill as a result. So I think it's beyond just enjoying what you do. I think it's more understanding that we're all here with a purpose. And so aligning with that purpose is what's important. And that was what I walked away from that experience with.
Wow, so was that kind of, oh, I don't know, just the genesis of you thinking outside the box a little bit and maybe like starting a film festival or figuring out ways where you can build spaces for other creatives instead of, you know, focusing slowly solely on your own career.
Yes, absolutely. You know, for me, I knew that there are so many filmmakers out there that wanted to, that have this work within them, or they have created this work. And I wanted to be able to create a space where they can share that with us, share that with the community, share that with the world. And that's where it came from. You know, I've always been the kind of individual that was community centered in the sense that I don't think there's anything that I've ever done where I did it solely out of my own self-interest. And to some degree, sometimes I think about that because especially with doing this festival and, you know, no complaints, but it, and here you go, the but, right? It's right, the but. It is a lot of stress, right?
Oh,
It's a lot of
I've witnessed you, trying to keep it going and the fundraising and just the organization of it every year. I cannot imagine. How many years now is it?
It's this is going to be technically the ninth year.
Okay.
Yes. So it's, it's very stressful. And if I were doing this solely for me, it would not be happening.
Well,
It would not be happening. But because of my desire to create a space for artists and for art to coexist and truly coexist with the community and celebrate people's creation, and not only just their creation, but their voice, because a lot of the artists that I guess exhibit their work. It's, they're saying something. They have passion and courage. And I want to encourage that, and I want to build on that, and I want to support that, because it takes a lot of courage to be in this industry and speak on issues, and especially for some people in other countries where these types of talk is seen as terrorism. Is seen, they're against the government. So, it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that. And those voices need to be celebrated, and shared. And so that's the main purpose for this festival, is to really celebrate those courageous individuals, man. And I love it. I love the fact that we bring together filmmakers, visual artists, performing artists, poets. It's because the festival is all about using all forms of art to speak to socially relevant topics and social injustice.
And it's coming up this November.
Yep, November 7th through the 9th. And this year I'm excited because we're doing a fashion show. Yes, and because our theme this year is labor and wage equity. So we're looking at the labor force and inequities within the pay wages, the disparities between, especially in the entertainment industry. We have the top of the line, above the line, and below the line, and the pay disparity is huge there. Not to take anything away from the above the line, which are your producers, directors, and the creatives in that sense, not to take anything away from them, but they make a lot more, and they have so m many more or much more areas in way in which they can recoup monies from the production. Whereas below the line workers, and they all play a part in making this movie successful, right? They get a pay, and that standard of pay doesn't necessarily help them, to keep afloat if there isn't a project after a project after a project after a project. And so I think there needs to be more fairness and more, I guess, taken into consideration that these people, they play a major part in making a project successful and should be compensated as such.
Absolutely. And how we're talking primarily like people that are kind of working maybe in the film industry in regards to what you just shared, but like how
Right.
can artists sustain themselves, just artists in general,
Exactly.
while creating impact? I mean, well, that's always been the age-old question, right?
Exactly. And then, when we talk about labor force outside of the arts, right, which we also are looking at within our festival, because we don't only focus on the entertainment community. So, we're looking at, what's going on with our migrant workers, with our day laborers, with our, people who are working within our homes, like our nannies, and we're looking at those type of labor forces, our people working in our Targets, our Walmarts, and all of those things. There's a lot of For example, with Amazon, they had to get unionized because of the labor the working conditions and the pay conditions. So we have to, start looking at the fact that everything's increasing, yet the pay rates are not increasing. And what are we as individual citizens, what can we do? And how can we impact ensuring that people in our country get paid appropriately, get paid equitably, so that because what it may not impact you today, but it could impact you tomorrow. It could impact your child, and because they're going to grow up and get into the labor force. So we have to be concerned about these things because just because it doesn't impact you today doesn't mean it won't impact you tomorrow. And another thing that we're looking at in this festival is the new creator economy. That's a whole nother thing
With
in
AI and
relation.
such, you mean? Just
Yeah.
it's a wild west.
Yes, exactly. And so just as with everything else, right? There comes a time when there's going to be some kind of regulation put in place. So what is that going to look like? How are corporations going to deal with the labor force in terms of the employee construct, right? So those are things we're going to be exploring in terms of creators being the new labor force and what that means and how it's going to impact the actual labor force as we know it.
Yeah, it's just talk for days on that.
I know. I know. Well, we'll be having a panel on it. So that will be interesting to see how we navigate those conversations.
Nice. Now, well, I definitely, if anybody's in Los Angeles, November 7th through the 9th, please go check it out. But are you've offered it online, correct? Or in the past?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we're going to be having it online as well. We're still working on the platform for that, but that will be announced shortly. But it will definitely be on our website, ptaff.org, where you'll find the information for our online screening. So anyone in the world, anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world can watch the films.
That's
Yes,
fantastic.
absolutely.
So, with all that you're doing and attempting, and I know there's a I've had to myself, but how have you worked through your own fear and possibly imposter syndrome?
Oh gosh. I
It's an
think I'm,
ongoing thing for everybody, for
yeah,
me at least,
exactly.
but.
I was about to say, I think I'm still experiencing the imposter syndrome thing because it's really interesting because even though I've been in the entertainment industry as an actor, producer, writer for over 20 years, I still feel that because I haven't had the financial success or the success where everyone goes, oh my God, you're on this show or you're on that show, you still feel like you're not successful or you haven't made it to the point where you can actually give advice or speak to people, which is the most ridiculous thing. Because that's not what makes you successful, right? Success is not just about being recognized or having a hit television series or, making money at it.
Sure.
And, so I had to redefine what success looks like and had to understand that I earned this ability, by just the sheer being in the business and doing the work. So that's, I had to come to that, but the fear doesn't disappear when you're ready. It disappears when you move. So the fact that I actually began doing the work and showing up and talking about it and doing this festival year after year, producing short films, writing television series. They haven't been made yet, but I've written, done pilots and things of that nature. The fact that I've done the work is what's important. And so the fear dissipates over time, as I continue to do the work. And I say that Courage isn't the absence of fear. It's just a decision to show up anyways, knowing that I'm being authentically me. And I think that's the most important thing that I can, bring to the table when I talk to people about this industry and talk to people who are looking to kind of start moving in this direction, or just people who are, ready and willing to take this, take and have courage to begin their creative journey.
So I was going to ask you a question like, what does liberation look like for you personally? And I think part of your answer, y'all would probably just share, right?
Yes.
Just being trying to be the most authentic version of
Yes,
yourself and sharing.
absolutely. That's liberation, right? The freedom to be who you truly are, standing in your power, standing in your authenticity. And knowing what that is, because we're in an industry where, as an actor, I mean, you can take on many different roles. You can take on many different voices, many different characters. But in order to do that, you better first know who you are, so you don't get stuck in one of those characters that you have assumed, right? And so when you know who you truly are, then you can move in this world and move in this space, in a way that gives you power. And that's liberation.
So what do you I want to let people know that the festival does operate on donations, and it is incredibly important and helpful. And so, if that's something that speaks to any of the listeners out there, please go to her website and check that out.
Yes, we absolutely solely at the moment operate on donations. We do not, as of yet, we have not been able to win any grants at this
I can't
point. And
believe that. I
I
can't
think
believe
one
that.
of the main reasons is that we, here's the thing. A lot of people think that filmmaking is a luxury, right? They really look at Denzel Washington made a comment about, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not saying Denzel's actual words here, but this is what I gathered from it. But basically what he said was, we have the privilege to do this work, and we're not dying. We're not going into the battlefields and dying like soldiers are and people in the, and I get that, right? I do understand that to a certain degree, there's a level of privilege. But not everyone who does this work comes from privilege, right? Not everyone who does this work had the ability to go to graduate school and meet peers and had families that can help them finance their films and have friends that will rally around them, parents that will mortgage their homes to help them. Not everyone comes from that. And then also, not every filmmaker comes from this country, right? So in this country, it may seem like a privilege to be able to do this work. It may seem like a luxury to be able to do this work, but there are countries where just to pick up a camera and video and make a movie is basically like your threat, you're like risking your life
Yeah, to tell a
doing
story.
that. So I think we have, because we're here and we don't have those experiences, we tend to think of this profession or this what people are doing within the entertainment or film space as a luxury. And so we don't support the filmmakers. So I think the fact that my platform is primarily about supporting and giving a platform to the filmmakers, even though these filmmakers may be from underrepresented communities, underserved communities, marginalized communities, their stories are about underrepresented people, underserved people, marginalized people. That's what I think we fail to understand, that that's a group of people that really do need the support, because they aren't in that class where their films are just about entertainment. These films are about bringing attention to issues. These films are about educating us about what's going on in our world, because our festival is a global. So we're speaking to domestic violence, but not just domestic violence in America. We're looking at domestic violence across the globe. And, surprisingly, we don't think it happens anywhere else for some reason, but it does, right? We're looking at LGBTQ issues. We're not thinking about, when I get a filmmaker from Iran, the last thing I'm thinking I'm going to get is a story about LGBTQ individual, a transgender person, and how that impacts their families. But that's what we're getting. And that person is risking their lives telling that story because it's a crime in that country. I had a film in our festival where a mother had to like sneak her son out of the Afghanistan because he was going to be killed by his family, not strangers, his family.
Jeez.
And she had to sneak him out, and he went to Turkey to seek asylum. So these are the stories that are being told, so yes, we need your support. So, because it's hard to get grants for that th story, because we're not doing, we don't have a foundation where we are like saving children from trafficking or something like that, which is, we have films about it, but we're not necessarily impacting that child who is being trafficked. And so that is the issue with getting grants at this particular time. Now, we are working on creating film education or civic engagement with our youth through film programs. So we're working on developing that and getting that in place, which at that point, I think we'll be more able to get grants for our youth programming, which we're working on putting into place. But as of this point, we have not been able to get grants. So we desperately need donations, because these filmmaker stories needs to be told, and we need to be able to continue to support their voices.
What you're doing is amazing. What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Oh my gosh. You know what?
What?
I honestly would have approached life differently if I knew what I know now.
How?
And one of the things I would definitely say to my 20-year-old self is be more courageous. Because I think at 20, I was courageous, but I constantly fell back on my mother's voice in my head. I constantly fell back on the fact that I had an education. Because my education was outside of the industry that I really desperately wanted to be a part of, I would constantly go back into that labor force, right? Go back to work. When acting wasn't quite, paying the bills, I would go get a job, right? And because of that fear that it would not support me. And so I would tell my 20-year-old self, stay present, be more courageous, just go for it.
Gosh. Well, thank
That's
you.
what I would tell my 20-year-old self, rather than the falling back. I think there's two different ways to look at it. The other way to look at it was like, because this is what my thought process was, right? Even when I went to work on Wall Street, and my main reason to work on Wall Street was I was going to make millions of dollars and then go fund my films, right? I'm going to make
Sure.
millions of dollars and then go fund my film. I barely lasted 2 years. I just could, oh my gosh. So I worked in what was a, do you remember the movie Wolf of Wall
Well, it's
Street?
probably a white male dominated.
Me, one, me, very much so. I was the only Black woman in the firm, and it was a boiler room. It was what boiler room? If you watch that film, Wolf of Wall Street and or Boiler Room, it was what that environment was. And when he's talking about chauvinistic, misogynist, oh my gosh, and being the only Black woman and the only, and I hate to say it this way, but the only educated Black woman. I started out as a receptionist. So I went there to work as a receptionist, and I saw the paychecks these guys were getting. I saw the money that they were making, and half of them didn't have college degrees. And I'm like, how? And it's crazy because all the Black men that worked there had college degrees. All the Black men had college degrees, but a lot of the white males that were working there did not have college degrees. And I was thinking to myself, how do they make all this money and didn't go to college? So I put it on myself to learn about the industry. So there was a woman there whom I will forever hold in high esteem. Her name is Kathy Seneca. I said to her, she was the head of the compliance, of the compliance of the firm. And I said to her, would you be willing to sponsor me to get my Series 7? And she was like, yeah, because none of the other women working there had any interest in getting their Series 7. And she was like, yes, I would absolutely support you. And so Kathy and sponsored me for my Series 7 and my 65. And I worked, so they promoted me to sales assistant. So I, one of the sales assistants quit, so she gave me the job as a sales assistant and then sponsored me to get licensed to be a broker. And my whole time I'm like, because I was already acting part of that, but this is one of the times when I fell back and went back into the workforce. And I think so. All I'm thinking of is I'm gonna stay here. I'm gonna wait, make all this money. These guys are making money hands over fist. I can do this. I'm gonna make this money, and then I'm gonna go finance my film. So that was my goal. But when I tell you that after getting my license and started trying to curate my client list and doing all that, but working with the brokers that I worked with, I was so disgusted. But I was like, of course, I'm going to do it differently. I can do it differently. I'm not going to, sell people things that did not exist.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to do that. This is what those brokers are doing, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it differently. And, but realizing that to some degree, your hands are tied. Yeah, I left that firm after 2 years, and yes,
Well,
that was my first move to LA.
I
But
would
that's
say.
a whole nother
Yeah, well,
journey.
yeah, I hear you when you say you wish you had been more courageous. I look at your whole life as being incredibly courageous and inspiring. I mean, you really, you have a mission and you do whatever you can to make it happen and to help other people and to bring awareness to all kinds of different subjects that are important to be brought aware of. And yeah, I mean, gosh, I just you're doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because you when you're in it, you don't necessarily
Oh, I know
see it
that one. Yeah.
that
Well,
way, right?
you pat yourself on the back because I am, and I know a lot of other people are too.
Well, thank you so much for that. Yes, I will take that and pat myself on the
Good.
back.
Well, we're starting to wind down. What
Yes.
else is coming up other than the festival here in November?
Well, the festival's coming up in November. I'm so excited about that. We just had a women's day where we did a day of talking about menopause. And so we're going to be doing more programming coming up in the future next year. And because in December we're going to be doing more planning, but starting in January, we're going to be doing more programming. Just check in on our website because we're going to have a lot of more targeted programming coming up in the future, because it was so successful doing the Redefining Womanhood and talking to women about menopause and screening the film called The M Factor. And if you haven't seen it, please try to see it. It's called The M Factor, and it's a documentary that is so informative. So many women are out here not understanding their change, that change of life. What's happening to their bodies, what's happening to them mentally, psychologically. And it's so important that as women, and as men who are married to women, that you understand what they're going through. So, yeah, I think that was very, very important. And we had a great time with that. And we'll be putting the sessions on our website as well. So please check back because we'll be having more information on that menopause programming that we did and what's coming up in the future.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I'll have all of your links in the show notes, and people can find that. So, well, I really appreciate you coming on. You've always been a I've always thought highly of you, and consider you a really great friend, and it's nice to have you here chatting.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, this was wonderful. And I've always looked at your story and just been inspired by it, Brian. So thank you so much. I'm so glad we were able to share this time.
It was my pleasure. We'll do it again.
Yes,
Take care.
absolutely.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson and all that is going on in his Creative Spark world, as well as this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. We love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.